Hello, and welcome to Happily Ever After is Just the Beginning. I'm Leslie Dorries. Several years ago, one of my all-time favorite clients came bounding through my door, and she said, "I had an epiphany." And I said, "Great, what is it?" And she said, "Relationships aren't natural." And I burst out laughing, and I said to her, "Well, where did you get the idea that they were?" But my client, like a lot of other people, just think that all we need to do is fall in love and everything will work its way out. In fact, the Beatles had a famous song, you know, "All you need is love, love is all you need." But if love was really all we needed, then the question is, why do so many relationships end? What happens to that love that brings us to the point where we want to get married and build a life together? Years ago, when marriage was different, when there was no choice, especially for women, about getting married, either about and divorce wasn't really an option, people could be stuck in unhappy and or unhealthy relationships. And maybe the pendulum has swung way too far in the opposite direction, and people end marriages at the first sign of distress. But what if there was a happy medium? What would it look like, and what benefit might it have to the couple and the children, their community and the culture, if we found that happy medium and walked with it? And so that's the conversation for today, and joining me is Sage Erickson, who is a graduate student at Brigham Young University in the Marriage, Family, and Human Development Master's Program. Her research is focused on relationship education, educational programs that teach individuals and couples how to form healthy and lasting relationships. So Sage, welcome. I'm so excited that you're going to join us and talk about this wonderful research that you're doing.
Thank you, Leslie. I'm happy to be here.
So the reason why I contacted you and asked you to be on the show is because I read an article that you had written called "Giving Hope to a Relationship Third World Country." And I thought that title was really interesting because you talk about, in the article, you talk about the United States as possibly being a third world nation when it comes to romantic relationships. Is it really that bad in the United States, or is this just an exaggeration?
Well, I think it depends on your perspective on this. I mean, the statistics are... they are pretty bad. There's a lot of people getting divorced. There's a lot of people that are not even getting married. And there's a lot of children that are not born to two-parent families. I know for myself... Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I just know for myself that with a lot of my peers, people in my generation are generally scared to get married just because of what we've seen in our parents and those around us and the media.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there was some article that I read about millennials, which are in that generation, that something like 40% of them will never get married, which is, you know, and that isn't, but on the flip side, I think it's something like 80 to 85% want to be married. So that's a real dichotomy, I think.
It is, and it kind of shows that all of us still want this relationship, and we want to have that close relationship of marriage, but we don't know how, and we're scared of what can happen if we do make that leap.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's really interesting because when we're afraid and we go ahead and do it anyway, we're kind of like playing with sweaty palms, and you know, I talk about going all in marriage, mm-hmm. that, you know, you can't kind of have just open yourself up and really, you know, don't hold back. But when you're afraid, how can you not hold back?
Yeah, and it is a problem because marriage is not one of those things that you can go into halfway. You can't just keep one foot out. It doesn't work that way.
Yeah, I agree. I actually talk to my clients about, you know, your kind of marriage is like climbing into a boat, and you can't really go on your journey if you still have one foot on the dock. But yeah, how do we get people to kind of jump? You know, maybe not jump, maybe we don't want them jumping into the boat, but you know, really stepping into the boat and really recognizing that, you know, you're gonna get on the water and you're gonna hit some waves and you know, you might hit some doldrums, but all in all, you can make it.
Yeah, I think it really is about giving people the confidence, the knowledge that they can make it and it can be a good thing in the end, that it won't just bring heartbreak and pain.
Right. Although I had a client many years ago who asked, you know, I said to her, what is it that you really want? And she said, I want my husband to never hurt me. And I kind of said, well, I said, the one thing I can tell you is that he is going to hurt you. The question is, did he do it intentionally? And that to me makes a big, huge difference because we don't all know whether or not the impact of our behavior on our partners. But the question is, are we willing to learn about that?
Yeah.
So this kind of comes up to one of the things that you were really talking about in this article, because and I understand it's also your area of research about promoting relationship education as a way to address the problems that are related to the impact of divorce. But actually, before we go there, can you tell me what you've discovered in your research about what the impact of divorce truly is?
On adults, on children? What do you mean?
Well, on adults, on children, on the community at large, because I think we like to think of, you know, that marriage and divorce are personal decisions, but they're personal decisions that have ripple effects.
They do. They definitely do. We've seen in research that divorce affects the parents, you know, both in their economic situation, especially for women, for their mental health and physical well-being. We've definitely seen that divorce affects children in all aspects of their life, academically, psychologically. And then we also see a huge effect on the economy. I mean, tax dollars that go into supporting people that no longer have the means to support themselves, perhaps, and even declines in worker effectivity. When workers have failing relationships, they make companies lose money.
Yeah, that's a really interesting thing, and I frequently will go around when I go out in the public and do talks about if you're a business owner, you have a stake in the relationship satisfaction of your employees from a productivity standpoint. I don't think companies understand the impact because people have to take, you know, people are depressed. You know, they're hurt and angry and depressed through the breakup of their relationship, so they're not going to be as productive. They'll miss work because they have to go to the lawyers or to court or whatever. And I don't think people understand how much it isn't just a personal decision.
Yeah. We'd like to think that it is just my private life, but the fact is that we live in a community, and what one person does affects everyone in some way or another.
So what do you think? Now I want to go back to the question about relationship education. What do you think that we can actually do, number one, to get this information out there to where people will really get it? And two, how do we let them know that there are things that you can do to make your relationship better?
That is a good question. I mean, the government, we have been trying already to get classes out there to teach people about relationship education. But the problem is a lot of people don't know about these classes. Sometimes I think maybe a large-scale media campaign would work better, kind of like how the public took on smoking. I mean, we had billboards and educational pamphlets, and it kind of saturated the society with the thought that smoking is bad, it's harmful. And over the years, it did change how we think about smoking for the majority of the population. So it might be better to go about it in kind of a large-scale media campaign.
Well, you know, and now is an interesting – now I find an interesting time because there is a lot of discussion about marriage. Of course, it's mostly right now around same-sex marriage and all of that. And I personally would love to see a bigger conversation about marriage in general. You know, but it there's a part of me that says, and even though I work with this all the time, and I actually believe that people could benefit from the information, but you know, the thing about smoking is it kills you. Divorce doesn't necessarily kill you. So why should I pay attention to a billboard or a sign on the bus driving by me? I mean, why would I do that?
Well, I mean, these days we can either wait for all of the evidence to pile up 20 or 40 years later and then see, oh, this really did affect me in huge ways. Or we can look at the trends that are happening right now, and we can look at some people's personal experiences, and we can try to avert this this big problem before it gets too bad.
Well, yeah, I mean, and in reality, the documentation is out there. I mean, a couple of weeks ago, I had a documentary filmmaker as a guest who's done an amazing piece of work with a documentary called Split, where she's actually talking to children, children of divorce, and they're telling it like it is. They're telling about the impact on them, and when she would do study groups. You know, with the parents, they go, "Oh no, we can't have that in the documentary. It's too hard." Well, and the kids are going, "No, we want more of this." You know, which I thought was great. You know, but it's like, you know, and I agree that maybe what you're talking about, like a public service thing, would be more impactful than trying to go about individual programs. Because I mean, I know about marriage initiatives in many states, but I only know about them because of my position and the conferences that I go to. I don't know about them as just a normal married person walking around on the planet.
Yeah.
So, but I want to go back to something because I didn't really go into it as much as I think would be helpful for my listeners. Can you talk about why you described the United States as a third world country in relation to romantic relationships?
Well, I guess I was thinking about the overall concepts of poverty and education, and I was thinking about how a nation that is poor. You know, there's a lot of adverse effects to poverty, but one of the big things that takes a nation out of poverty and into a good place is education. We're talking about education of women, education, we're just talking about math, English, science. And I was wondering if the same theory could apply to relationships, because I felt like the statistics of how relationships are doing in the United States were just getting worse and worse. And I started wondering if it could be related to poverty. People are suffering from these relationships. And could education help them in the same way that it helps people that are economically poor?
So have you... have you found in your research or personally that education really does help in kind of limiting either changing people's, I don't want to say changing people's minds about whether or not they should get divorced or maybe even married in the first place. But have you found that education is helpful?
We have. We've seen that relationship education does help, middle-income white couples. We've even done some new studies, a new meta-analysis on does relationship education affect or help low-income couples. And we found that it does. There's small positive effects. They are small. And it is kind of a new area to try and target relationship education to low-income couples.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the big problems with this research, though, is that we see great effects for those that are coming,
mm-hmm.
but trying to get couples to come to these classes is a challenge.
Well, yeah, and I've run into that myself in one, people think they have to be, crazy to go see a counselor or therapist. I go, yeah, no,
right.
Please, no, you don't. Or that things have to be so bad. I mean, the statistic is it takes people being unhappy 6 to 7 years to go to to go get help. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, the analogy that I use all the time, it's like, would you walk around with a broken leg for 6 years before you went to the doctor? But or the other thing that I've heard about trying to get people to do premarital work, which of course I'm always about being proactive, is, well, I don't want somebody to tell me that I shouldn't marry this person. And I'm thinking, well, if you're already having that thought, then maybe there's something, not quite available.
Right.
And I'm wondering, I know that you're at BYU, and I know that a lot of the pro-marriage position can get caught up in the religious aspect. And I'm wondering if you've, and it's not necessarily an area I want to spend a lot of time talking about, but I'm wondering if you found that may be part of one of the issues that a lot of these, and I don't know where some of these marriage initiatives are being done. I know some of them are being done through churches. I don't know how many are being done just through regular communities. Do you know what impact that is having?
So you're asking, what impact does the fact that these relationship classes are often connected to religious organizations have on this movement?
Yeah, with maybe the overall acceptance by the community writ large,
Yeah, I can see that many people would kind of think, oh, I'm not going to go to this relationship class because it's just teaching conservative values by religious people that are
mm-hmm.
just pro-marriage. The fact of the matter is that I've looked at all the grantees that do relationship education nationwide,
mm-hmm.
and there's not that many that are connected to a religious organization. There are a few, I would say maybe five that I've seen,
mm-hmm.
but by and large, they are community organizations that are not affiliated to any religious belief
okay.
system or values. Yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, I know that's, because I've actually talked with people, with officiants, not necessarily, people who just do marriages and they're not necessarily religiously affiliated, and they struggle to suggest maybe people do some premarital work or, so it's not religious, it's not a religious affiliation, and that's kind of my whole purpose. It's like my stuff isn't anything to do, I'm not that I'm antagonistic to any of that, but it's more like if you're going to do marriage, let's figure out what works, which, by the way, you and I know there's research that we know what works.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk a little bit about what some of those relationship skills or relationship education would cover in some of the more successful programs that you've researched?
Yeah, I've researched extensively the PrEP program,
mm-hmm.
which now has within my reach and within our reach programs, and they go over communication, listening, conflict resolution. They also go into looking at your own personality and your partner's personality and your family background, just so that you know where each other is coming from. And a lot of those, you know, differences in marriage are just differences of how you've been raised, how you think about things.
Right, which I tell people, it's you're different. It's not necessarily right or wrong. You're just different, and that's okay. And how do you learn to embrace that and negotiate through it? I call those things the parameters of your relationship, that you kind of have to figure out, how do I work through this?
Yeah. I will say, though, one thing that I hope that maybe will be covered perhaps in future programs that I think my generation really needs to hear is messages about how to connect, how to love, and how to have the best sex. Because I feel like in my generation, we've been just saturated with messages about sex from the media and
mm-hmm.
from sex education classes, but we never talk about what sex means in a committed relationship.
Like, so you're actually talking about sex as true as true intimacy, not just the physical act,
mm-hmm.
but the emotional connection.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of people in my generation need to hear that.
Well, yeah, I mean, and but here's the question, and it's a really important question for me. What would be the best way to reach your generation to give them this information? I know, you know, because everybody's connected on the internet and Facebook and Twitter, and you know, I've had conversations with my daughter who's, you know, almost 19 years old, and you know, there was one day she was texting her best friend about setting up, you know, a date, and I said, you know, you could probably handle that a whole lot faster if you just called her on the phone. But it was like, oh my gosh, talk to her. So what's the best way to reach this generation?
That's a good question. I've been wondering about whether we can create phone apps that give like a little bit of relationship education,
mm-hmm.
or there's online programs. I don't really know what's been done yet with those types of things, but I think that's definitely a direction we could go, to use new technology to reach this generation.
Yeah, because that's one of my challenges, is because, you know, I'm a product of divorce, and I'm probably old enough to be your mother. And, you know, so I know that we're on like second and third generation divorces, and I know that the millennials are like, you know, what the heck is this? You know, there's this conversation about whether marriage is still relevant, whether monogamy is even possible, and I think those are conversations coming out of fear. And, you know, the question is, you know, how do we help people know, yes, this is still possible? Because as professionals, we know the research is there. We know effective communication skills and positive intimacy skills are possible. The question is, how do we get people into these programs that you're finding are successful? How do the most successful programs get their people, get their participants?
Well, we've seen that a lot of programs partner with different agencies in the community.
Mm-hmm.
So they won't try to recruit all their own participants, but they'll go to the Head Start program and recruit from their participant or
mm-hmm.
another local agency. And that seems to be effective, but we still have a lot to go in how to recruit people. That is, it's truly a problem with these programs.
Yeah, and I and is that part of your research? Is that part of what you're trying to do with your personal education is try to figure out, how to do this better?
I am definitely. At the moment we're focusing on trying to assess these programs and see how they're working and if they're working. But we're definitely looking also at what they're doing and what works with recruitment efforts. There is still a lot to go on it though, and it's definitely a field that new researchers could definitely grasp onto and just go with their new ideas and out of the box thinking.
Yeah, and it's really tough because as I said, we bumped into this idea that government has no place in our private lives, that my decision is my decision, and again, I think a lot of that's fear-based because nobody wants to hear that they're not doing it well. But it's kind of interesting because even though the exam that both my kids took to get their driver's license was really short, I was actually surprised they were both back in the back in the DMV. But after 15 minutes, I'm going, what? But they had to prove that they knew something, and they were given the skills. They were and I tell people I had to get a license. I had to take an exam to do what I'm doing, and I have to keep getting continuing education units to keep my license. But there's nothing like that for marriage, and I know that there's a resistance to it, but it's kind of like the example you gave in the beginning about the public campaign about smoking. There is an impact to what we're doing, and I'm kind of thinking, well, maybe we should have continuing education units for people to keep their marriage licenses. I don't know, that's just an idea. But it's I'm not quite sure, and I don't know if you know why people are so resistant to getting education about relationships, other than it's like what I was talking about my client in the beginning who thought they were relationships were just natural.
Yeah, I think there definitely is a feeling that relationships come naturally. I mean, that's how it happens in the media. People just fall in love, and then it's happily ever after. But they do take time and they do take effort. And you bring up a good and interesting point about wondering if we should require people to take classes to get married. I've thought about that, but I'm not sure because at the moment there's a lot of people in my generation who don't want to get married just because they're scared of it. And I think if we do require them to take classes, then it might discourage even more from making
Well,
that commitment.
and I hear that, and the thing is that the challenge is that people may not be getting married, but they're still having children and they're still having romantic relationships. And it's kind of like which I it's kind of like being married without being married, but and again, then that and then you and I know that just exacerbates the problem because I think the statistic is that non-married couples who have a child generally are broken up before that child is five, which to me is a really scary statistic. So yeah, I mean, yeah, this is a conundrum, and I'm so glad that there's researchers and people working on this. Because it really is impactful to society at large. Is there anything that you'd like to suggest to the listeners, to my listeners about what how they would even find, marriage education or relationship skills education in their communities?
Well, I think for a lot of people, just Googling marriage education might help them to find something in their community. There is a large website of all the classes that the government is funding right now. I think it's hmrf.acf.
So that's F as in family?
Gov.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So
could you repeat that one more time?
I will. It's kind of a long one.
Uh-huh.
hmrf.acf.hhs.gov. It's definitely not a catchy one that you would remember.
Right.
But on that website, they have all the programs, and you can see them by state. So people can go into whichever state they're from, and they can see what programs are available to them.
Okay. Well, Sage, thank you so much for being on the show. And one of the things that, you know, what I'm hearing is that even though most of us marry for love, and I, you know, love may be necessary, but it isn't sufficient for a lasting marriage, so that, you know, if you want a great marriage, you need to learn relationship skills and then practice, because you will be happier and your children will be happier. So
just knowing that relationships take work.
well, I'm going to agree that they take effort. I don't like using the word work with marriage just because it implies let's go plow the back 40. But I hear what you're saying. So, the thing that I want people to take away is that there is help out there. There's education. There's places people can go to learn these relationship skills so that they can have a happier relationship. And that's what this program is all about. It's trying to provide information. And so we're going to continue this conversation next week. And for all of you who want a happier marriage, go to that website, find the place in your community, send me information, send me questions. I'll be happy to direct you. And until next week, stay loving.